From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents, context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
I live in San Francisco in the Glen Park area.
Sunset. Portola Valley.
I currently reside in Nob Hill.
West Portal.
I live in Russian Hill.
Coming up, we'll see how tenants in Chinatown are fighting to survive San Francisco's skyrocketing cost of living.
Half of Chinatown is actually the tourists don't see. Half of Chinatown are SROs, single room occupancy residential hotels.
Then we'll meet some former Chinese showgirls who keep the Chinatown of their childhoods alive through dance.
Nowadays, when we come out in our fishnet stockings, we don't even have to get to the stage yet. People are like, whoa, they start applauding.
And we'll visit with some critically ill young people who are finding healing through music.
I think music therapy really helps kids just be kids, not necessarily a diagnosis.
That's all coming up today on Cross Currents. It's a tough time to be a tenant in San Francisco. The city has some of the nation's highest rents alongside record-setting eviction rates. There still are pockets of affordability. In Chinatown, the average rent is just a third of what it is in other neighborhoods. But many units are overcrowded, and tenants say some landlords violate health and safety regulations. These pressing housing issues have inspired a group of low-income, mostly elderly renters to overcome language and cultural barriers and fight for better living conditions. KALW's Melanie Young has the story of their struggle in Chinatown.
Portsmouth Square occupies one whole block in the heart of Chinatown. On a drizzly weekday morning, toddlers play in the sandlot, elderly women huddle and chat, men square off over their checkerboards. In the midst of it all, Norman Fong looks for a place to sit.
Even in the rain, it's crowded here.
Fong grew up in Chinatown in the 1960s and has worked in the community his entire career. He's currently the executive director of the Chinatown Community Development Corporation, a nonprofit that works on neighborhood housing issues.
Half of Chinatown is actually the tourists don't see. Half of Chinatown, maybe above all the restaurants and shops, are SROs, single room occupancy residential hotels.
Fong says that's why residents flock to parks like Portsmouth. They need space to breathe.
Well, Portsmouth Square is really important to our community because it's really the living room for our community. If you've been into an SRO, a single room occupancy, it's very tight. It's a closet-like space.
Chinatown resident Li Mingdang, her husband, teenage son, and daughter all live in one 7x7-foot room. They immigrated from China a year ago. Aside from a couple of stools, a twin bunk bed is their only furniture. Nothing else fits. So the family sleeps, eats, studies, and rests together on the bed.
My son and husband live in the top bunk, and my daughter and I sleep down here.
They pay $300 a month in rent. Even for Chinatown, that's really low. But Lee says that's about all the family can afford. Her husband, a janitor, can't find full-time work. Money worries and living on top of each other lead to a lot of conflict.
Well, what happens? Oh God, I can't even speak. When my husband gets back from work, he's tired. He yells at my son to get off the stool and sit on the bed instead. I am so sorry. I wish I could help earn enough to move.
It used to be, when immigrants arrived in Chinatown, they'd live in an SRO for a while, save up, then move to a bigger place. But soaring rents and low wages block that path now, even for more seasoned immigrants.
Nice to meet you. My name is Li Pingyi.
Li Pingyi, no relation to Li Mingdang, moved to the U.S. in 2004. She's lived in her SRO for 5 years. At the moment, her daughter's friends are over, which means there's no space for Lee to sit. So she leans on the doorway of her unit saying hello as neighbors walk by. As we speak, the lights suddenly go out.
Power shortage. There's always power shortages. I have to wait for the neighbors to finish cooking. Then I have power to cook my dinner.
With no electricity and no place to sit, Li Pingyi paces the hall in frustration. She wants out. She's been in the U.S. for 10 years, and she feels stuck in her SRO.
I not enough money to buy the house. Yeah, I support them, and, you know, the grew up my daughter, and you need the money. You always come, mommy, I need money, buy food. It's hard.
Like many in Chinatown, both Lees are immigrants with limited English, limited incomes, and limited prospects. They are not, however, powerless. The women are members of the Community Tenants Association, or CTA. The group was founded 26 years ago when some Chinatown tenants got together to fight an eviction. When they won their case, they decided to share what they'd learned with other residents. Since then, they've seen each other through rental problems and weighed in on city housing policies. Neighborhood resident Liang Wing-ho says CTA saved his home.
I had just retired when I was evicted from my apartment. I was really worried because I was old and only had my retirement income.
Leung and his neighbors turned to CTA for help. They pulled together other housing rights groups and elected officials to support the tenants.
We held rallies in front of the building with hundreds of people. At a mediation conference, the landlord rescinded the eviction notice.
That was 6 years ago. Today, Leung is CTA's president. He says the group has about 1,000 members and feels like a giant family. But they're also very disciplined about their goals.
We have weekly educational workshops on housing, health, and social security benefits. So we're very up to date and prepared.
Being prepared gives CTA a voice at City Hall, where members regularly testify. At a recent Muni hearing, CTA Vice President Zhang Peizhuan spoke.
The city's becoming increasingly unaffordable. I know some senior couples who can only afford one Muni pass, so they take turns to run errands, and most importantly, to go on doctor's visits.
That unaffordability is especially stark in Chinatown. Average household income here is only one quarter the rest of San Francisco's, but rents are on the rise.
Many people in the city rely on rent control to keep them in their apartments. Tonight, however, one couple is refusing to leave the home they've lived in for decades. NBC Barry's
CTA member Lee Gumji rented an apartment on the border of Chinatown and Nob Hill for 34 years. When a new landlord invoked the Ellis Act to evict all the residents in the building, Lee decided to fight. The community rallied behind her, as Norman Fong from the Chinatown Community Development Corporation explains.
All of a sudden, I think because she was saying, I'm not moving. I'm not leaving my daughter here, who's mentally challenged. This is my home. I deserve to have a life here in San Francisco. I don't want to move. And then somehow her story resonated with hundreds of others. And so on the day of the eviction, there was a lot of Community Tenants Association there. But citywide, people came from all over.
Dozens of elderly Chinese tenants stationed themselves in front of the apartment.
To San Francisco's largest tenant association, grassroots.
Lee and her family eventually had to leave their apartment. But Norman Fong says the case drew public attention. That helped spur action at City Hall and Sacramento.
And so this little Chinatown case, and with the Community Tenants Association backup, citywide and statewide policies are changing now to help protect all San Francisco so that there's homes for middle-class folks. We've turned fear into action. That's what Community Tenants Association represents to me. They're fearless.
Every Wednesday, CTA members meet for their workshops, news updates, and to socialize. They begin each session with a sing-along, says President Leung Wing-ho.
Singing makes us happy. It gives us the courage and spirit to fight for our causes.
That fighting spirit is spreading. 100 new members join CTA every year. For Cross Currents, I'm Melanie Young.
Have you had issues with rising rents or difficult landlords? You can let us know by calling 415-264-7106. Just leave us a message at 415-264-7106 and we'll try to feature your story on the air. This is Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Holly Kernan. We just heard about the fight to keep Chinatown affordable for residents. Like so many neighborhoods, Chinatown is changing. From the 1940s until the 1960s, the neighborhood was home to a thriving Chinese-American nightclub scene, filled with showgirls, ballroom duos, comedians, jazz singers, and magic acts, all featuring Asian-American entertainers. Celebrities like Bing Crosby, Duke Ellington, and Lauren Bacall were all spotted over the years, along with tourists, businessmen, and locals. That scene died out in the 1960s as Carol Doda-style topless dancing eclipsed the old variety shows. But there's a group keeping the memory of those old Chinatown nightclubs alive and high-kicking. KALW's Jen Chien has that story.
Starting from the top.
Wednesdays are rehearsal days for the Grant Avenue Follies, a 12-member dance troupe that does tap, jazz, hula, and other styles. They perform 4 to 6 times a month. That may not sound like a lot unless you know that most of the dancers here are over 70.
No. What time are we performing?
Yeah, no, at 11 o'clock. In the new facility, fifth floor, Asian section.
The group came together 9 years ago. Cynthia Yi, who used to dance at the Chinese Sky Room, was at a senior center dance class. Yi is an active member of the Chinese-American community, and at the time, she was helping to plan a fundraiser for Chinese Hospital in Chinatown.
And so I said, come on, let's do a night in at the Forbidden City nightclub.
How high the ocean, how high the moon.
All of them had great memories of performing in the clubs, the glittering stage lights, the sassy costumes, meeting all kinds of new people every night. So, the four former showgirls, then in their 50s and 60s, put together a number for the event.
We were an instant hit. And it was so much fun. We said, oh, let's do another one. And that's how it all began.
Yi grew up in Chinatown in the 50s. Her upstairs neighbors were dancers and entertainers who worked at the nightclubs. And one night, her parents took her to the biggest and most popular of the Chinese clubs, Charlie Lo's Forbidden City.
That's when I first saw, you know, Dorothy Toy, Toy and Wing dance, and that's when I fell in love.
Dorothy Toy and Paul Wing were known as the Chinese Fred Astaire and Ginger Rogers. And Dorothy Toy just happened to be one of Cynthia Yi's neighbors. When she was 7, Toy encouraged her to go to ballet classes. And when she turned 17, Toy asked her to join the show at the Sky Room.
See that up there? That's the Chinese Sky Room. Where the stained glass is, that's the Chinese Sky Room. And inside had beautiful, wonderful antique chandeliers. And that's where I danced.
Where the Sky Room used to be is now a conference room for the Grant Plaza Hotel. The former site of Forbidden City now houses a franchise of the Barbizon Modeling School. And though she still spends a lot of time in Chinatown, Yi lives in the Richmond now. There's a large Chinese population there. And every Wednesday, there are the Grant Avenue Follies, rehearsing at the Rec Center on 18th Avenue. Ivy Tam is one of the group's original members. She performed at the Forbidden City in the early 60s, but before the Follies, she hadn't danced for many years. She says she's happy to have returned to dancing now at age 78, and especially happy to be able to bring back good memories for other seniors who aren't as spry.
At least when we perform, make them a little happier. That's one thing I can do. You know, if not, what I can do for them? Nothing. I think our little entertainment, make them happy for that day, that will be way good feeling. for me.
Tam's specialty is a dance with giant feather fans that always wows the audience. And that's not all.
And those days when people look at it, really, it's kind of, you know.
Pretty sexy.
Sexy, uh-huh. But they like it, though.
They love it. They love our fishnet stockings. I mean, definitely. Nowadays, you know, when we come out in our fishnet stockings, we don't even have to get to the stage yet. People are like, whoa! They start applauding.
Yi hopes that the Grand Avenue Follies can bring some of the feeling of that old Chinatown back, at least for those that remember it. But she's also thinking ahead.
It's my dream to have a small venue, small place in Chinatown, to have the best wonton mein, wonton noodles, and the downstairs cellar to be a live entertainment area. And to have people to be able to come back to Chinatown, second generation, third generation, fourth generation, where they feel comfortable and say, wow, my grandfather used to live here. And they want to see the place. They want to experience the old Chinatown flavor.
For now, the ladies of the Grant Avenue Follies are bringing that flavor back, one song and dance at a time. In San Francisco, I'm Jen Chien for Cross Currents.
You're listening to Cross Currents. I'm Holly Kernan. We just heard a story about how dance can bring the past back to life. Now, on to another story about the power of art to heal. Oliver Jacobson started playing violin when he was 6 years old. When he was 18, he got good enough to get into Boston's prestigious Berklee School of Music. Back then, he wanted to be a star.
Well, I was in the practice rooms for 4 hours a day, trying to be the best jazz violinist I could be, and just feeling kind of hollow in that.
That feeling of hollowness led him to music therapy. It's a discipline where music transforms into a tool to help heal those who are sick. Now he spends his days lugging musical instruments through the halls of UCSF Benioff Children's Hospital. KALW's Liz Mack followed Jacobson, and she brings us this story.
All right. Hi, Maya. Nice to see you. Can I have a high five?
On the day I meet her, Maya Mead is just 8 months old. She's been here at UCSF Benioff Children's Hospital since the day she was born. Oliver Jacobson visits her once or twice a week.
Hello, Maya. It's nice to see you today.
Maya was born with one of the worst heart conditions you can have. The left side of her heart, the one that usually pumps blood to the body, never developed. And early on, she also got kidney failure, which doctors said made her chance of survival incredibly low. But Maya's a fighter, and after the first of three complicated surgeries, she rallied. On the day we visited her, she was still recovering and waiting for her second surgery. Gordon Mead, Maya's dad, says Jacobson's visits are part of what's helping her get better.
Her change when Oliver comes in is really internal. You see her, like, grow, you know, spiritually, and it feels good. Watching her grow like that, it's just, you know that every part of her body is growing. Her spirit, her heart, you know, her body and her mind.
Jacobson is the hospital's only music therapist. He uses music to help kids heal. Everything from regaining motor or speech skills to stress relief, or just as a way to talk about their feelings. Often, it helps them forget about the hospital and just be themselves.
As a therapist, I have to look at their diagnosis and what their goals are. But I also just try and walk into a room with no expectations sometimes. Really just, who is the child? Without any thought of their diagnosis, who's that child? And how can I help that child be who they are?
With Maya, he says music is a great way to help with her coordination. She's gradually been getting stronger, something he can see when they make music together.
Okay, Maya, let's try these shakers. You want to try two today? I think we've only seen one.
Right.
Jacobson's doing something you'd normally do with any baby, playing. But this is play with a purpose.
With the monkey in the background. And this one, too. Oh, boy. This is a two-shaker day.
That's Maya, shaking both shakers. Before, she could only shake one. Jacobson says for her, it's a pretty big deal. As a baby in critical condition, she didn't have the energy or the stamina.
Both hands, left and right, playing with both hands, left and right.
Jacobson uses music to help his patients reach specific therapeutic goals. But he's not just playing music. He's a trained musician and a professional therapist. Many of the country's top children's hospitals have music therapy programs, and people like Jacobson are becoming a more common part of the medical profession, just like doctors and nurses. But instead of using a stethoscope or a scalpel,
I have a bag of different shakers and percussion instruments. I have a little ukulele. I have a buffalo drum. It sounds better when it's not with everything. I have a little happy drum.
So he's not just entertaining. He's also helping patients in serious situations. Vivian Hernandez is a nurse in the PICU. That's the Pediatric Intensive Care Unit.
Well, kids come in because they have some kind of a little bit of instability in some way, you know, something critically wrong with them that needs to be addressed. And so with that comes a lot of noise, monitors, alarms, frequent visits from the doctors, you know, repositioning, different interventions from the nurses. And so it's just a very overstimulating environment.
We're heading in to visit Michael Salou. He's 6 years old.
So Michael has pneumonia, and he's very lethargic. He's really tired. He's awake, though. So this session will be kind of be more the stress reduction, pain management, relaxation kind of end of things.
Before going in, we rub on hand sanitizer and put on masks.
What do you think, Michael? Should we sing your favorite song, Three Little Birds?
About a thing. Because every little thing gonna be alright.
When Jacobson plays, he's also helping parents. It's a chance for them to get a break and can be a tangible way for them to help their kid heal. Michael's mom is in the room. Tears roll down her face. She says their family listens to reggae music all the time.
He loves it, and he always gets this little twinkle in his eye when he listens to it because he knows the words and everything, so it just makes me really emotional, you know, being in here and listening to it. But it's lovely. It's perfect. I love it.
Singing, this is my message to you.
Vivian Hernandez, the nurse in the PICU, says Jacobson taps into a place that can be hard to find.
Some of the work that Oliver has done with these kids is just really deep in terms of just, I wouldn't almost say primal, but, you know, it just sort of takes them to a different place for a little while.
Kids in the hospital can be here for weeks or even months. They might be facing a major diagnosis, and Jacobson and the staff try to help them maintain a sense of normalcy. That's what a big part of his job is, helping kids figure out and express their feelings. That's what he did with Haley Gomez. Haley, who is 9 years old, has leukemia. She and Jacobson wrote a song together.
A song called I Didn't Know, and it was just all about her processing, not understanding what was happening with her body as she was going through this new diagnosis. And it was just amazing to see her come to insight in that process.
They recorded the song at the hospital, turning her room into a studio. Haley acted as producer, and her dad joined in as part of the band.
Years ago, it was hard for me. It was like a dark hole that swallowed me.
When you see kids playing with Jacobson, it's true. They light up. And even though you're in this sterile hospital room with all these machines beeping around you, for a second, it all drops off into the background, even for Jacobson.
I'm taken to another place, another plane, and this world kind of disappears, and I go to, it's hard to describe, I go to a better place, otherworldly place, and that fills me up and gives me the energy that I need. So I try and take these kids to that place too.
For Cross Currents, I'm Liz Mack.
I didn't know what was going on.
To find that story or any of the stories you've heard today, just go to klw.org and click on Cross Currents. That's also where you can hear more local stories and subscribe to our podcast. And that's it for today's Cross Currents from KALW News. Our team includes Isabel Angel, Lawrence Chan, Audrey Dilling, Jeannie Dwan, Ashley Ann Krigbaum, Nina Gensler-Debs, Suki Lewis, Ted Muldoon, Holly McDeed, Ryan Miller, Seth Samuel, Stephen Short, and Liza Veal. Today's show was engineered by Chris Hoff. Our line producer today is Sandia Dirks. Our senior producers are Julie Kane and Jen Chien. Ben Trefney is our executive editor. Our theme music is by the John Santos Quintet. And because of your support, we are very proud to say we are listener-supported local public radio. The music you're hearing is called Rockabilly Revival, as played by the Royal Deuces with founder Mitch Polzak. He'll be playing in Alameda this week. The Mitch Polzak Show is described as a one-man performance with guitar, banjo, and jokes. If that sounds intriguing, head to the Forbidden Island Tiki Lounge in Alameda this Thursday. The fun begins about 8:30 p.m. All of that information, along with more local music and more local stories, is at klw.org. For Cross Currents, I'm Holly Kernan.